Ching ching, bling bling. In this episode, it's time to cut the chatter, cause Black Lives Matter. Welcome to the Tucci Talks Wealth, Health, and Everything Else podcast. I'm your host, David Tucci, an educator, a father of three. Join me as I take you on a funky journey through life, from a reckless young man to a humbled older man. Each week, I will offer different insights on my life experiences and the experiences of others, and how that has shaped our present day realities. So let's begin our funky journey into improving our health, wealth, and you guessed it, everything else. Love that music, and it just puts my mind at ease, and I want to dance. And we know that dancing is a great activity for what? Well, health, wealth, and everything else, which is our motto here on Tucci Talks. I'm your host, David Tucci, and it's Monday, but don't fear, because I got your back. We have a contentious issue to discuss today that has taken over mainstream media. But we want to take that topic and bring it home, make it authentic and real. If you feel encouraged to participate in the conversation, drop me an email, david@TucciTalks75.com. Follow me on Twitter, Snapchat, and Instagram at TucciTalks75. I have the equity lead at St. Francis Xavier Secondary School on today's episode. But before we introduce today's guest, we need to recap last week's episode where we explored the world of intermittent fasting. The recap is brought to you by Anchor. What did I learn from last week's episode? Well, I think if you are in relatively good health, fasting can have awesome benefits. Doing a 16-hour fast per day is a great way to train the mind and body. Also learned that the science isn't out yet on whether intermittent fasting expedites autophagy in humans. As Tony mentioned, it happens in mice after 24 hours of fasting. The other aspect of intermittent fasting that I thought was beneficial was the idea of tackling small goals in life and overcoming small obstacles so that maybe you can have these incremental improvements that will help you further tackle other endeavors in your life. And it just gives you a nice sturdy ground, because life is a struggle, let's face it. And in previous episodes, I said the same thing where I used that Stoic philosophy, amor fati, the struggle is the way, and memento mori, you will die. So having that perspective helps to not dwell on failures. If you want Bob to do a 7-day fast, let's encourage it. Let's rally together and send in your emails, david@TucciTalks75.com, and let's see if we can get enough steam, and I'll pass it along to Robert, my brother, Bob Tucci, who I really appreciated coming on last week and really sharing his thoughts and his journey. And Tony gave great insight as well. It is time to dig into this controversial topic today. It's not really that controversial for me, because these are the topics we need to explore if we're going to evolve together. And I can see already that the T2 Nation is slowly growing. So let's facilitate that growth, because I want it to continue. The more, the merrier, the stronger we become, the more we could be heard. I have known my next guest for over 15 years. We have coached basketball together. We've emceed events together. She is an educator, a parent, and an advocate. Growing up in the suburbs of West Toronto, she learned very quickly how to move in a white world as a Black woman. It is my pleasure to welcome Leanda Pugliese to the podcast. Brought in some music for your intro because I want to create a smooth environment, and I want to get right to it. I don't want to waste any time. I want to dig right in.
Yeah, okay.
And your last name is Pugliese, and I know what an Italian last name sounds like, and you have one. So is it safe to assume that you're married to an Italian man, and perhaps you had to deal with some of the controversy that comes with that?
It is not safe to assume, but I am. It is not safe to assume, but yes, I am.
Okay. And did you have...
Because that's when we get into trouble. Sorry.
Right. But me, you know, I come from Italian background. My father's Italian immigrant. So I have an idea, an understanding, and a philosophy of the thought process. So did you have to deal with that, being a Black woman married to an Italian man?
Absolutely. Like, I had my own experiences where I heard from people who are of Italian background. I've heard the remarks that they have made.
Are you saying before you got married?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, like, there was that part of me where I was just like, okay, I don't want to paint all Italian people with the same brush. However, my encounters often were connected to remarks that I would hear. Like, one I remember hearing, it's just like, oh, my dad would kill me if I married a Black man.
Right.
But basically, I'm friends with you, so look how much, like, look at how we've grown. Like, look at how we've changed. And so I did have that sense of concern. I knew after, like, when I had, like, I've dated white guys in the past. I've dated Italian guys in the past. But it always goes back to this idea that I'm just like, I don't think, like, I'm great to date, but I don't think they want to be taking me home. And that's unfortunate that I thought
that's
like
what,
that.
The way you thought, or the way Absolutely. You thought they thought?
No, that's how I thought. And then I also thought that's how they thought. I'm like, this isn't going to amount to anything. That's basically what I thought. This isn't going to be, this is just going to be us chilling, hanging out, doing our thing, having fun. We're young.
So then why would you date them if that's your thought process?
Because in my family, our family is all mixed up with all sorts of people. So like that didn't even like enter into my mind when I'm dating him, because I'm just like, gosh, I have family that's like South Asian. I got family that's from China. I got family that's white. I mean, like Jackson, we know that, you know, that name was not our, that wasn't the name.
That's your maiden name, right?
Jackson, yes, is my maiden name, but I'm like, Jackson isn't like, that is not the name that my ancestors, had. So, you know, like for me, I just was like, yeah, it's okay. I know that this can work in my family because there are people in my family who are dating and have dated people outside of their race.
That makes sense. Now you
said, I knew, sorry, go ahead.
You said you grew up in just outside of Toronto.
I did. And
predominantly white?
I would say at that time in the 80s and 90s, it was like 90%.
Do you want to share some of that story, the way you grew up? You want to delve into that a little bit?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you this very, very quick but defining story. I was probably in kindergarten, and I had been watched by a neighborhood woman. Like, she was our daycare. She was our daycare provider. And there was a girl named Lisa. Lisa had blonde hair, blue eyes. And one day, Lisa came up to me, and she was like, you're the color of poo. And I'm just like,
how old are you? You said kindergarten?
Probably, I want to say kindergarten. So I'm going to say 4 or 5. I can remember it so vividly.
Wow.
Because she knew it. And all I thought about was like, poo comes out of your ass. That means you're telling me I'm shit. But clearly those weren't the words I was using at 4 or 5.
Damn.
Okay. So I had a very visceral moment at that point where I was just like, okay, I am different. I knew I was different, but that was like the moment where I'm just like, oh shoot, like this is real now. We are coming into an age where somebody's going to be like, you're different and you are lesser than. So I remember going home and I was bawling because I just wanted to be accepted by this kid. Like Lisa was cool. Like, well, what I thought she was. She was also a raging racist, clearly. But I went home, bawled my eyes out. And my dad, both of my parents are Jamaican. My dad gave me a book. And I wish I still had this book, but I remember it. We went to our basement and I'm bawling. And he gave me this book and he's like, black is beautiful. My dad wasn't having this like, I want to say like that, like, Full House moment where it's like music and they're like putting their arm around you. Like my dad's like, you read this book. I'm going to tell you this, you are beautiful, but people are going to question and challenge you probably for the rest of your existence. So you better read this book. And the book was just simple. It was like literally a juvenile book. It was like a Mr. Muggs, but it was like, licorice is black. Black is beautiful. The night is black. Black is beautiful. A crow is black. Black is beautiful. And I was just like.
So was that pivotal that your dad actually.
Oh my gosh.
Had the kindness and foresight to help his daughter understand she's got to stand on her two feet.
Absolutely. Because he wasn't going to sugarcoat it. Like he wasn't trying to be like, Lee, you know, we're all the same, but we, you know, everybody's going to be. He was just wanting to be honest. And he was like, they're not all going to be nice to you. If you're going to go out in this world, you need to educate people, which kind of contradicts now kind of coming out of Black Lives Matter, the movement around, like, it is in our job to educate. Like, that's what I'm coming out of this moment in our history, which is like, I don't have to educate people about why do I do this or why is it like this. If you want to seek out in this day and age where there is Google and all sorts of things on the internet, and you can't just type in a word just to ask, like, why is that? Because somebody has already thought of it. I feel that way now too. It isn't my job. I can share my experience, but it's not my job to do the research of like, hey, let me explain to you the Middle Passage, or let me explain to you the civil rights movement, or even the civil rights movement within the Canadian diaspora. Like, no, that's not my job. So that has taken a lot of work, but you do the work, because up to this point, I was always doing it, or I didn't do it at all. And I just kind of skirted away and was like, I don't want to touch this because I don't want to make white people uncomfortable, because, you know, if they get uncomfortable, they're going to get defensive and then it's going to turn back on me and I'm going to look like the jackass.
But what does that look like, making white people uncomfortable and it's going to turn back on you?
Very simple. Like, that was offensive. I find that incredibly rude. And then their backs get up against the wall, they're being white people and like, what? I didn't mean that. I'm not, like, that's not what I meant. And it's just like, well, if you ask them to expand, what did you mean? They're going to be like, I. And then it's just like, do I look like the hero? No, I look like the villain, because it's just like, well, that's not what they mean. And you read it and you misheard it. And they're always trying to, again, tone police or white explain what it is that they meant. And I'm not going to accept that anymore.
So that's a term, white splain.
Well, it is now. Right. Yes. But that's been going on a long time.
Right.
Where a white person wanted to try to explain to a black person what it is that they meant around a racial topic. And it's just like, no, you don't get to say that because you don't have the information. You don't have the background. You just don't, unless you do have the background. But I've yet to meet somebody who's gone to, like, has a psychology degree or sociology degree on black issues that are white. They exist, but I haven't met them.
Right.
You know what I mean? So.
So now with this Black Lives Matter movement that's been going on, what do you think about people who believe that the movement is lacking clear leadership and it's misdirected with emotional responses rather than clear and concise ideas of what they want to achieve?
I mean, I would say to that this is, like, for me, this movement has been going on for decades, if not centuries. Right now, it's just people are taking notice because there literally was a pandemic that forced our world to pause and see the violence that was being incited on Black bodies. And that came out of Ahmaud Arbery because we were in a pandemic, but that's been happening long before. And, you know, I say to people, shame on them when they say there's no clear directive or leadership, because when you have to work through centuries and centuries of hurt and pain and trauma, why do people feel like we need to have it all figured out and laid out?
That's an excellent, yeah, that's excellent
point. In like a few weeks or months. Like, right. Shame on those people to be like, well, where's it going now? Didn't Give me you, something more.
Yeah. Didn't you recently attend a Black Lives Matter rally?
I did. I
Do you want to share that?
Yeah. Okay. So I wouldn't say I ever attended a protest rally, but I went to my first one during the Women's March, and that would have been in 2017. And then I went to this one in June, and it was a very emotional afternoon. I brought my son. I had my mother-in-law, my sister-in-law, and a really good one of my best friends come. And I cried from the point just before we got to the meeting point. I was crying because I was just like, I'll probably get emotional like describing it, but
that's fine. Go. That's why we're here.
I think what I felt at that moment was like, I've seen images in magazines, online, on television of the fight. And I say fight for equality and in the civil rights movement. And I thought about the Freedom Riders. I thought about, you know, the march in Selma. I thought about those moments. And I thought, I never thought I would attend something in my lifetime that even remotely mimic that. And then I did. And I thought about all the people that came before me and all the pain and hurt that they had come and were fighting for. And then here we are in 2020, and we're like, okay. So simply because we're not being lynched, Black people aren't being lynched, we somehow believe, and I think this is an opinion of a lot of white people, that race and race relations and racism and prejudice isn't that bad. And for me, I'm like, yes, it is. It still is. It's like Black people are still being hunted and killed literally for running in neighborhoods or right. Sitting in a parked car. So to go back to the question about the protest, it was just emotional. It was very, very raw. It was so beautiful and yet so emotional.
How did it feel having your son with you?
I think that's what made me the most emotional.
Right.
I felt like, I'm just like, I probably wouldn't have tackled this subject matter before all of this happened. And now I'm listening and I'm learning because I want to make that clear. People feel like this listening learning bit is just coming from for white people. It's right. for Black people too. I'm listening and I'm learning, and I'm listening to the points that people have said about what is a good time to talk about race. There is never a right time, but the idea that we're stripping children of their innocence when we do talk about it at a young age is the wrong approach, because I need him to have a sense of what the world may want to put upon him before it's too late. Like I watched something about a parent having the talk with their kid, and I thought to myself, like, oh my gosh, I'm like, yeah, there is that talk that very few white people would ever have. No white person is going to have with their kid about how to interact with the police.
Right.
And I'm like, so am I going to wait till he's 14, like getting ready to maybe think about getting a license in 2 years' time to have this discussion? No, because he could be 10 years old walking and potentially have an interaction with the police. So when is a good time?
What's the discussion like with your husband about that?
Ooh, man. My husband and I have had some epic heated discussions.
I would think.
I think a lot of it comes back to this idea of, I think, looking at life through rose-colored glasses, and that's not to knock my husband. It's just more like the idea we talked about when he's like, I don't see race. And he is now learning that that's exactly what you need to see, because when you see race, you'll see the inequities right. that exist. And so when we would talk about that, or even we had a couple of weeks ago, the discussion about identity, and my husband said he felt that if I refer to our children as Black, that I'm denying the white side of their family. And I said to my husband, I said, you know what? I go, he will have constant reminders in every walk of life about whiteness. And that will be in the school system. That will be in the billboards that he sees. That will be in the community that we live in. I am choosing to say I'm raising a Black child. I said to my son, I said, you are Lorenzo first.
Right.
And then I said, and you are a Black boy. Because that is how the world is going to see you before his dad walks into a room and people go, okay. I was wondering, but I wasn't sure.
Right.
And he can have that sense of like,
he's going to get to an age where he's going to identify with one or the other. He will.
Yeah. Or you know what? When he does have that moment, you can say it with pride.
Correct.
Without this fear of like, but your dad's also white. Yeah, I know my dad is white. I love him.
Right.
But I know that I am a Black man, and I am confident in being a Black man.
So I've had a lot of conversation this summer mm-hmm. with my brothers and friends about white privilege. Mm-hmm. Can you give me a little bit of your definition of what you think white privilege is?
Oh, that's a good one. When people want to hear, when you are going to criticize something, okay, and white privilege is not a criticism. It is not even like a bad word, but people, instead of receiving it with grace, they feel like it is guilt. And nobody's saying that. Somebody's just simply saying, when you inhabit this body, like when you enter this world as a white person, you hit the lottery. You've hit the lottery. Like you are going to walk through life fairly easily. That is not to say that you will not have struggles.
Right.
That is also not to say that I do not have privilege.
Right.
I also come for privilege. I'm English speaking. I am able-bodied. I am Christian. Like, people love to think that when we use this term, that that person who is saying it is like, I have had no privilege. I recognize that I have some privilege, but I don't get to walk through this world as a white person and be like, feel and know that you can just move with ease.
Yeah.
Without thinking. So to me, when people say, well, what is white privilege? I just think like white privilege is being able to move through this world without having to think about it. I have to think about my color. I have to think about the way in which I move. I have to think about where I go. Like, that is not the experience of white people. That's all. Yeah.
It just isn't. No. Well, that's why That's why I wanted to define it, because we've been discussing. This has been such an integral topic this summer, and I just wanted to get a little bit more of a definition down, and that makes sense to me, because we need to be educated as well. We need to understand what it is,
and not be afraid of it. Like, why is that such a the nastiest word. Like, there are some nasty words, but now when you say you have experienced white privilege, and they're like, oh, tired of that term.
Yeah, that's the reaction.
Why so defensive? Nobody said that you developed it. You've benefited from the system. And if you refuse to say it, now the world is ready to and prepared to show you how the systems have worked, and that there is a disproportionate number of people who are at the receiving end. So when we get into education, and we, you know, the report that came out of Peel, and they say Black children make up this percentage, but yet they make up this percentage for, I want to say, like 22% of suspensions.
Right.
Yeah. Somebody has got to be able to say, that's not a genetic thing. Like, oh, Black people are just genetically,
right?
They're genetically, you know, struggle. No, that's not. That is implicit biases that people in power have and continue to do and exact upon Black and brown bodies. It is their own prejudices that they think, again, going back to my earlier remark, that if we're not telling Black people to go to the back of the bus and we're not lynching them from trees, we have made huge strides. Like, we are letting you sit at the table. Well, no, hence why, like, the Oscars hashtag so white. It was just like, because it is.
Right.
You are telling me that in this day and age, there are no incredible Black story narratives, filmmakers, directors, producers, casting agent. Like, none of these people exist? Really?
So speaking on the theme of education, I teach a basketball class, and the class is predominantly Black. They use the N-word a lot with each other. Should educators tell Black students who use that word with each other to refrain from using it?
I'm going to say to somebody who may choose to use that word around me that I don't use that word. I am not comfortable with that word. So please refrain from using that word. That's my point. I'm not going to now police and say, you never use that word. I will happily explain my thoughts as to why I may take issue with it, but to say you can't, I don't know. I just feel like now I'm starting to change my tone. I at first was like, no, you can't say it. And now I'm just like, I'm trying to do work around how the community, some individuals in the community have taken that word and they've appropriated it. And then I also think about the people that they listen to, and, you know, they enjoy that music sorry, I should say like that music, but they enjoy those artists who in some cases do use that word. I enjoy those artists.
Right.
I enjoy some films, some television shows that right. use that word.
Like, you sent me a resource that I think I'm going to put on the website, TucciTalk75.com. I'm going to put in the link section about on YouTube, uncomfortable conversations with a black man. He explains that they use this word that was oppressive and turned it on its head.
Yeah. And if you asked me this question like 5 years ago, I would have been like, no, it's absolutely, it's a horribly ugly word. But I can't tell another person that they can't use it. I will tell a white person they can't use it.
Right, obviously. I don't think a white person should even be thinking of using it.
But we know that they do.
Yeah, that's mind-boggling.
Yeah, it is. But I just don't think you get to police and say, you know, to that individual, well, don't say it. I just think I can only share what I feel about it, and that's it.
Right.
And I let them come to their own conclusions, because I mean, I would have had a very different perhaps opinion on a subject when I was 25 than I am now at almost 40.
For sure.
So I know that can change, you know. So I mean, like, I feel like don't get caught up on like, okay, we need to eradicate it and completely eliminate it. I just express that it is just not something that I use. I don't use that word. I don't want it used around me, and that's it.
So now that sports is starting up, I want to ask a question and get your thoughts on Colin Kaepernick's kneeling a couple years ago.
Yeah.
He was vilified, and now all the athletes are kneeling. In the major, in MLB, so Major League Baseball, they have on their bags, the bases, MLB, BLM.
Yeah.
All the athletes are kneeling. So what do you think about that?
Put your money where your mouth is, okay? Here's my thing about this. I am very much aware that this is a moment. And many major sports teams, leagues are getting behind the Black Lives Matter. My concern is, I have discussed with, you know, some friends about this idea of things being performative, and that through social media, it can get very, very, it can be very much that piece where it's just like, we're going to post, I'm going to show people that I am standing with Black Lives Matter. And yet when the hype dies down, which it kind of is now, like we don't have the news coverage that we had in those first, you know, few months and week of the pandemic. Is that momentum still, can we anchor that momentum? Is it still going? Can we keep the foot on our foot on the gas? And my criticism sometimes, I was like reading these press releases that, again, like you got out of the football, or in this case, you mentioned like Major League Baseball. And it was just like, oh, we're going to play the Black National Anthem for Juneteenth, or, you know, we're sitting down with our players and we're discussing their issues, and we're not going to penalize them the way that they that we may have done in previous years if they wanted to choose to get political. But yet I never heard the NFL at any point say we need to apologize to Colin Kaepernick. And I don't want you putting some words on, you know, on a base or in the stands which is oddly enough, like, again, we're doing this and it's just like, okay, well, right now the stands are empty.
Right.
And it's like, you don't have any like clapback really at this point from potential, potential fans who would be like, well, I don't want to hear this. I don't want to see this. So it's funny, like, would this continue when we could start having fans back in the stand where that is in their face and you are talking about what it is that you're doing as an organization to, you know, the word, the buzzword, amplify the voices of Black players, Black history within that sport, those kind of elements. I don't know yet. So I am watching and waiting with bated breath. I am waiting to see what goes down before I think I can make a full judgment on whether or not I think putting BLM on out or on your t-shirts or on the bases or wherever is going to be enough. Like, put your money where your mouth is. I need to see some stuff. And so I wait.
So what I want to do right now is move into my segment called Guess
What?
What are some of the dumbest things or comments white people have made towards you that they didn't even realize?
Okay,
how well, dumb they
one,
sound.
One, at my church, there was somebody who's just like, you speak very well. That has been one.
You speak very well?
You speak very
meaning,
well.
Meaning you're not supposed to?
What?
Hey, you'd have to ask that dude. I have no idea what that was supposed to, that microaggression, but he was like, you speak very well. I'm like, well, of course, Ninja, I do, because I can speak. Like, what does that mean? And do you say this to everybody that you talk to? You know, I've gotten, well, you know why you got hired, right? Got that one.
You mean as a teacher?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Are you joking?
Oh, yes.
That is a guess what moment.
Yeah, that's a guess what. You know why you got hired. Not because I have a university degree, went to teacher college. No, they need to fill a quota. I'm not that smart, but they just got to give it to me anyway. Like, what? Are you serious? This isn't something somebody said, but people do. It is definitely the hair touching. I hate that. They're doing it a lot with my son, and I'm just telling him, you know, please don't touch his hair.
You say that, right? You just flat out say that.
I have to now, because I'm just like, your hands are nasty. I don't know where they've been, and you're putting them in my kid's hair without my permission.
Is there a comment with it? Is there a comment with a hair touch?
It's always just like, oh, his hair is so soft. And I'm like, what do you think our hair? Like, they literally say in the Bible, our hair is like lamb's wool. That means like lamb's wool is soft, Ninja. Like, what are you talking about? All of our hair is soft. Like, I don't have a Brillo pad on my hair.
So there's a growth and evolution happening, and that's what we need to do. We need to continue to grow and evolve and have these discussions.
Right. And not be afraid of them.
Right.
Like, so
before I let you go, and I appreciate you so much for coming on.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate you asking me.
Can you give the listeners, whoever's out there listening, a couple resources if they want that they can go to? And I'll put it on, like I said, I'll put it on the website and I'll put it on a couple on the links section, and they can just go and explore if they're interested.
Yeah, I mean,
I know that one resource is good. I like that was simple. The Uncomfortable Conversations.
Yeah.
With the Black Man. That's a YouTube one.
Ta-Nehisi Coates, Between Me and the World.
Say that again.
Ta-Nehisi Coates, Between Me and the World. And then, you know, like, I feel like the books right now, can I just add this part before I let go?
Absolutely.
Before we cut this, but like, it is not lost on me that the right now everyone's talking about White Fragility, the book by Robin DiAngelo. And I think this much is that it's interesting how that is received, because it's a white person challenging white people on white fragility. I don't know how it would have been received, or if it would have been received in the same way, if the voice and the perspective was from that of a black person telling white people about white fragility. You know, I just think that it becomes a little bit less threatening for that white person when they hear it from another white person. But it's also, I want to note, very scary when a white person challenges another white person, because they're supposed to expect, you're supposed to be on my side.
Right.
You're supposed to be with me. So it can work both ways. Like, hey man, it's a shared experience. Like, I got you. I got you. And then it's like, and then that white person like calls them out. They're like, what?
Right.
Like that's something that, you know, I is not lost on me. But there's another one called Me and White Supremacy. The name escapes me, but there's one by Desmond Cole. You know, it's just, there are a plethora of books. So if people really want to do the work and become allies, just literally type in the word text on race.
Right.
8,000 of them will pop up. And they may be like, I'll read the one that is the shortest and the easiest, but start there. Find a journal. There might be a journal article that you could find that, you know, will be not too overwhelming. Start there. Read it.
Well, I appreciate you coming on here sharing your story, because the idea is if there's people listening.
Yeah.
And they feel inclined to, maybe they're inspired to share their story. Maybe they want to talk about it with someone in their circle and, you know, get the ball rolling. And maybe they want to share it, email your story. If you want me to, I could share it on the air too, for another topic at another time.
Right. And you know, I want to emphasize this. The experience of Black people is not a monolith. It is not the same for everybody. So I don't claim to speak on behalf of all Black people. I'm speaking on behalf of me.
Right.
Of the people I know that have shared their experiences with me who are Black. You know, so it's not meant to be like, well, I know a Black person who says that's never happened. It's very possible.
Right.
I'm not claiming that their experience and my experience go hand in hand. It may look different. So that's another thing I want to like just drive home.
Well, keep staying strong and keep being that strong parent, well,
obviously,
in your child's life, because especially now we need direction. We need direction. I'm struggling with my kids too, and it's not easy.
Right?
I hate being a parent sometimes.
Well, I hear teenagers are real. It's really a kicker. And though I have forgotten how long ago that
was. It's brutal. It's brutal.
I feel like there's a whole new level with like social media. Like it's just.
I don't even want to get started. That's another time. That's another episode. I will get there. But I will not do is put donkey ears on my kids.
There you go.
All right. Okay. Have a good night, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks. Okay. Peace. Bye. Peace, love. Bye.
I doubt my dad is going to live down the donkey ear story, but let's face it, when you do something like that, you don't deserve to live it down. Anyway, I want to thank Leanda for coming on the podcast today. It takes a lot of courage to share personal stories, especially with a theme as sensitive as the one we just tackled. However, the light at the end of the tunnel is that we continue to evolve and grow together. We don't have to do it alone. Everyone out there, I urge you to share your story. Get in touch with me wherever you're listening. The email is david@TucciTalk75.com. Find me on social media, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat @TucciTalk75. If you like the content, subscribe, leave a review. Let's build the momentum of this podcast and get it to do what it has been designed to do. to think and inspire. Speaking of inspiration, next week I have a young man joining Tucci Talks who has lived abundantly in his short time on Earth. He played in the 2019 NCAA Men's Basketball Final Four, where they had lost a heartbreaker to Virginia, 63-62. A guard on Virginia hit three free throws with 0.6 seconds left in the game. It was just a devastating and controversial loss. He will be sharing his journey and giving us his insights on how he overcame a devastating and gruesome injury. And I saw it on YouTube and it gave me shivers. But, you know, he overcame it and he will provide a little inspiration for us all. So thank you again for joining me. This was a heavy topic today, but we got through it. So let's enjoy the rest of the week. And as I sign off, I always say, remember to add a little funk to your day.